It is 108. Pete McMurray in for John Williams all week. John's on vacation. We have a jam-packed show today. We have the mayor coming on at 2:05. Jeff Rawson from the Today Show, Rawson Reports. Are you guys familiar with Rawson Reports from the Today Show? Jeff takes a situation that's very uncomfortable and breaks it down for you. We'll talk to him at 2:35. And Brett Baer from Fox News at 1:35. But first, I need to mention that we are giving away a Weber grill tomorrow. All you have to do is listen for the grill sound effect, and caller number 7 qualifies to win the Weber Spirit Grill and a gift certificate from International Meat Company. So think about it. The weather's getting warm. You're going to start grilling. How about a brand new grill and steaks from International Meat Company? That's a pretty good deal right there. So listen up. Sometime in the next half hour, Elif will play that grill sound effect and we'll qualify a person. We're going to give away the grill tomorrow on the show. Our first guest drove in from the suburbs. I love this. He is a congressman out of the 8th District, which is Cook, DuPage, and Kane counties. Am I right on that?
That's right.
Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, it's good to see you.
Hey, same here, Pete.
Am I screwing up your last name or I finally get it right?
It's getting closer every time.
Because we've talked a half a dozen times when I filled in for Steve.
Right.
You're
right.
On loan from the Cochran Show, by
That's
the way.
That's right.
Yes, it's good to see you.
Same here, man.
Now, you had an event. I grew up in Peoria, and my mother still lives there. Half my family lives there. Of course, my cousin is Darren LaHood, the congressman down there. You and Darren had an event down there.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's great to be back here, Pete. So basically what we did was we did a joint town hall meeting, which is kind of unusual. We weren't really sure what to expect, but it ended up being quite a discussion, a wide-ranging discussion of the issues of the day. And believe it or not, there wasn't a lot of yelling. There wasn't screaming. It was kind of a reasoned discussion, and I learned a lot.
Okay. The thing is, town hall meetings are very tough because you got people, they just want to vent, mm-hmm. and they want to be heard.
Right.
So it wasn't really like that? It was just more of a discussion?
Well, you know, I think people were candid with their questions.
Right.
Let me just, at the outset, make that clear. But on the other hand, it was kind of a polite, reasoned civil discourse. And I think that's something that's missing right now. But I think I also think that the Institute for Principal Leadership at Bradley University, which hosted it, did a great job of moderating the discussion and making sure that, you know, we were really talking about substance and not just rhetoric or anything like that.
I love it. Hold on a second, Congressman. We have some breaking news up in the newsroom. Domati, what do you have for us?
Yeah, an update on our top story. Murder suspect Travis Ryan King is now in custody. He was arrested moments ago. Now, this is the man suspected of killing 4 people at the Waffle House near Nashville, Tennessee. We'll have more information on that per Steve Bertrand at the bottom of the hour.
Thank you, Domati. We're going to talk about gun laws in a second, but back to the town hall meeting. I know Darren does that from time to time because I see it on his Facebook page, and I've seen video from that, and everybody's angry about politics right now. Do you hold these town hall meetings up here?
Yes, I think I've held roughly 20 town halls and public forums in my district. I find that to be the best way to get immediate feedback about what's on people's minds. It's really easy to kind of, you know, have filters between you and your constituents, and it's much better to just talk to them directly, and that's what I believe in.
Why is everybody so angry about politics?
I think that, you know, there was polarization to some degree even before Donald Trump got elected, but after he got elected, I think the polarization has become worse. I think that the president has not, you know, lessened that, and in some ways he's inflamed it, you know, sometimes through his provocative tweets or his statements. And I think that, you know, if anything, the people that I run into, whether they're Republicans or Democrats, want to see more of what I think was on display at the joint town hall with Darren and me, which
right.
was, you know, we don't have to be disagreeable to disagree on the issues. You know, we want to be civil and reasoned and polite and kind of talk about these things, you know, substantively.
You've always said that you'll work across the aisle. You'll work with Republicans, you being a Democrat. You talk about being sensible. I mean, I feel like you get an elected official, he or she is in office and they're worried about getting reelected.
Right.
And if you reach across the aisle, your base is going to say, hold on a second, they're working with the other team's party. I don't know if I like this person.
It's possible, yes. You know,
so it all turns into a game.
It turns into a game, but I think that you really have to figure out those places where you're going to stand up for your values and your conscience, and you know where you have to be the loyal opposition, so to speak.
Right.
And then where you have to, you know, reach out to people on the other side and work on issues of, you know, common interest. For instance, in my case, my great passion and focus in this Congress is career technical education. The issue that, you know, maybe a four-year college degree isn't for everybody, but a post-secondary education has to be. So working with a Republican congressman from Pennsylvania named G.T. Thompson, we actually passed a bill out of Congress to modernize our career technical education system.
Right.
It was not only bipartisan, but it was unanimous.
That seems like a no-brainer.
It is a no-brainer. And, you know, because I think we did it the old-fashioned way, which was through compromise, it got through the House. But you know, on the other hand, I've also been very vocal in my opposition to, you know, the various ethical lapses on the part of the Trump administration, this issue of potential collusion with Russia during the 2016 cycle and so forth. So I've managed to do both, and right. I'm going to continue to.
I don't want to wake up on Saturday morning and hear about my president calling the former director of the FBI a slimeball. That's me. I just think that the person in power, if that person is unstable, it trickles down to everybody.
I think,
and that's one of the reasons that everyone is so angry about politics.
I think that's exactly right. And for that matter, I just say that the tone at the top, you know, basically is mimicked throughout the government. So, you know, with regard to ethical lapses, if there are ethical lapses at the White House, you know, people like Scott Pruitt think that it's just fine to buy a $43,000 soundproof phone booth that you'd only see in Get Smart. And he buys
what
it for his
office. What goes through
a
person's mind?
You know?
Yes.
That's just crazy, you know?
It's just nuts. Congressman Raja in studio with us. We follow each other on Twitter.
Yes, sir.
Barbara Bush passed away at the age of 92. She was being laid to rest on Saturday. There's a wonderful picture of the Obamas, the Clintons, Melania Trump, and both President Bushes in this picture, and you zoomed in on the socks that H.W. Bush was wearing. They had books on them.
Yes.
And your tweet was, his wife was all about literacy and reading.
Yes. You know, God bless Barbara Bush and the Bush family, and they really are in our thoughts and prayers right now. You know, I think that Barbara Bush stood for you know, basically making sure that all children were educated, that they're literate citizens, and that's something that we have to celebrate.
Right.
I'm glad he did so with his socks.
Yeah, he did. How about him greeting the mourners on Friday? He went in, paid his respects to his wife, he had a private moment, then they opened the doors to the public, you know, 3,000-4,000 people walked through.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And he shook hands as people walk by.
Amazing. I think, you know, that type of humility is really missing right now. And, you know, look, I disagreed with George H.W. Bush's policies, but the way they conduct themselves, at least as president and now as former presidents, is, you know, I think that's something that's a model for others.
It's interesting. George W. spoke last week so eloquently about his mother and talked about her faith. And you're listening to him, or at least I was thinking, wow, he sounds so presidential now compared to what we have. Yes.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
I think a Saturday Night Live skit summed it up. I think you like me now is the right refrain from George W. Bush.
The Senate changed the rules to let Senator Tammy Duckworth be allowed to bring her baby on the Senate floor. And people are saying, why did she have to do that? Well, she didn't have to, but it was time.
Yes.
I mean, here's a woman that's a senator and she's nursing her child. Why not?
It's exactly right. Look, Senator Tammy Duckworth is has paid her dues in so many ways for our country. And now when she is having a child, it's a time for celebration. And obviously, in a society where we want women to be able to rear their children and be able to fulfill and pursue their God-given talents and ambitions,
right,
why would we ever prevent her from doing her job?
Or any other woman, you're
or
right.
Or any other woman.
My mother's a working mother who had 12 children. My wife, all my sisters, I have four sisters. Yeah, they all work.
And to their credit, I believe that this was done through what's called unanimous consent in the Senate, which means that 100% of the senators agreed with the rules change, which I think
it's about
time.
And it was nice to see both sides of the aisle embrace her as she brought her baby in.
Yeah.
It was nice. It was pretty
yes.
cool. Congressman Raja in studio. I'm going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. We'll talk about gun laws and immigration and a few other things. Okay? It's 720 WGN. In studio with us is Congressman Raja. People can follow you on Twitter. What's your handle?
It's just Congressman Raja.
Okay, that's easy. Yeah. Krishnamoorthy? Am I pronouncing that right?
Getting closer, man.
We've done this dance for a year.
It's okay.
You don't even care anymore.
I already told you what happened when I introduced myself in Chicago when I was campaigning for office.
Oh, no.
I said, Raja Krishnamoorthy, and someone said, Roger Christian Murphy. Very nice to meet you. Just call me Murph.
It happens. You're an immigrant.
I am.
My great-grandfather came over from Lebanon. He's an immigrant. Okay, what do you think about the immigration laws?
You know, we used to have a welcome sign on the front door of America. I'm concerned that we're yanking that welcome sign away. We attract the hardest working, some of the most talented people, some of the brightest people from around the world to start our businesses here and to employ people to help the American workforce and economy. And now we're turning those people away. And that's a big problem.
The sanctuary city, Chicago, there was a ruling, I want to say it was Thursday or Friday, that said, hey, you got to still grant Chicago federal money, even though President Trump said, if you're a sanctuary city, we're going to hold back your cash. Well, we took him to court and the mayor won. He was very happy about that.
Well, look, I think that this whole issue of the sanctuary cities basically boils down to this, which is that I don't think that local authorities are trying to get in the way of federal authorities and what they're trying to do. It's just that they're saying, look, we are not going to be your instruments with regard to law enforcement. And we're going to have to, you know, pursue our local policies and priorities. Not to mention the fact that, you know, you need a lot of people, you need everyone in the community to cooperate with regard to law enforcement.
Right.
And, you know, I think what the federal authorities are doing is kind of driving these communities apart and making it more unsafe for everybody in the community locally.
This shooting in Nashville.
Yes.
This kid whose guns were taken away. He's from Morton, Illinois, Tazewell County. The sheriff said over the weekend that his guns were taken away and his father came and picked up his guns and his father ended up giving the guns back to the kid. He travels down to Nashville, walks into the Waffle House, and thankfully he was arrested today, but killed four people and two others are in the hospital.
Right, with an AR-15 assault style rifle.
Why should that assault rifle be on the street? Gun owners would say it's a slippery slope. You take that away from us, what's next?
I understand. So I'm from Peoria, Illinois, just like you, and there a lot of people own firearms and they use them for completely lawful purposes.
My brother's a hunter.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Hunting, yeah. Sportsmanship, marksmanship, etc. And we have a Second Amendment, and I respect that. But I think that most law-abiding citizens right now, Republicans and Democrats, are asking certain questions like, for instance, why aren't universal background checks instituted to make sure that people with severe mental illness or people with a history of violence are allowed to have
that? Which seems very sensible.
Why are certain assault-style rifles still available for public sale? You know, Dick's Sporting Goods, Walmart, Kroger's, and others took an affirmative move to basically remove these from their shelves because, quite frankly, they understand what most people understand, which is that these are not necessarily weapons that should be available widely.
Right.
Or
used for sport.
Right,
yes.
Right. And you know, they are definitely not, you know, the head of Dick's Sporting Goods is one of the most, you know, fervent Republicans out there.
Right.
This is not a partisan issue. I think we have to take certain steps forward. The last thing I would say is we talk about these mass shootings, but there's a slow-moving massacre that happens every day in this country. There are 33,000 gun deaths, one-third of which are homicides, two-thirds are suicides. I've introduced a bill, a three-day waiting period at the national level, which doesn't remove guns from lawful citizens' hands or prevent them from getting them. It just removes the notion of impulses driving the purchase of guns and then used in homicides. It's been shown to have a 20% drop in homicides, 10% drop in suicides. It's a three-day waiting period, but I can't get traction on it because there's so much opposition from the NRA and other entities.
Congressman, it's Steve upstairs. I'm interested in this young man in Tennessee. His guns were taken from him after an arrest outside the White House. And instead of being confiscated and kept, they apparently were given to his father. Now, I don't know if it was ATF or Secret Service who first took the guns or local police, but it seems to me to be a problem in the process there if you confiscate the guns from one person and then give them to a family member.
100%. I agree with you. I don't understand how that was allowed to occur.
Should that person moving forward be punishable by law?
I don't know. We have to look at this. But the one thing I would say is I wouldn't give the guns back to the family where that person lives. I think that we have to retain them, especially where this person has a history of illegal gun possession or gun violence, or in this case, taking it to the White House. I mean, this is just crazy that he would be able to get his guns back.
Right.
But can I just say one thing? We talked about there are four victims of that shooting at the Waffle House. I just read a really poignant story about James Shaw, who basically ran out of nowhere,
what a rock
tackled
star.
The guy, threw his assault-style rifle over the counter at the Waffle House, and saved untold number of other victims
from
dying.
I love that story.
And, that just shows you that, for all the, bad and evil out there, there's a lot of good as well.
Yes, he's a hero. He said he thought of his 5-year-old daughter and grabbed the gunman took the gun and threw it away.
My God.
Wow, good stuff. And you've talked to John Williams about doing a town hall meeting up here. I'm in 100%.
Okay, yeah, we do.
I want to be a part of that.
You know,
absolutely.
Darren already agreed we'd do a home and away. one in Peoria.
That's
one
the basketball player in Darren.
I guess it's home and home for me.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
I got to say that we just got to bring a little more decency to our politics, a little more civility. And, Darren and I wrote a joint op-ed saying, titled "What Happened in Peoria Shouldn't Stay in Peoria,"
right?
And we wanted to get out and share this with others.
It's okay to disagree. Let's have a civil discussion.
Yes.
It's okay.
Yes,
it's all right. We're
yes.
all not going to agree on everything. Congressman Raja, thanks for making the trip downtown. It's
Absolutely.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Pete.
And I'll see you soon.
Absolutely.
1:38, Pete McMurray in the Allstate Showcase Studios. Our next guest, he is the chief political anchor for Fox News. You can see him weekdays at 5 o'clock. Special report with Brett Baer. He's coming to Chicago. He'll be at the Chicago Athletic Association Hotel June 5th, signing his new book, 3 Days in Moscow. It is Brett Baer. How you doing, brother?
Hey, Pete.
I don't know if it was Twitter or Instagram. I saw you at the Wizards game.
Yes. Took the kids and Amy to the Wizards game last night. We were down 2-1, but then came back and tied it up 2-2. So we're still in this thing, and it's good times. The kids had a blast, and my son got John Wall's sweaty towel, which he was really fired up about.
That's great stuff. All right, let's talk about the Democrats first. The Democrats aren't waiting for the outcome of the Mueller investigation. They're suing, saying there was conspiracy with the Trump campaign. They claim the Trump campaign, Russia, WikiLeaks conspired to hack the DNC. They're seeking millions in damages. Is this going to work?
Probably not. When you have Democrats out there lambasting Democrats on filing this lawsuit, that's just not, it's not a good start. The reason they are is because, for example, Representative Jackie Speier on the Intelligence Committee says there's investigations already ongoing and that this lawsuit just complicates things and makes it political. And Claire McCaskill, who's obviously up for re-election in a red state in Missouri, she's saying this is not a good idea, and it's really all about raising money for the Democrats. Now, the chairman, Perez, was out this weekend defending it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they're going to have a hard time galvanizing people that this is worth it.
President Trump's personal attorney, Michael Cohen. Cohen needs to ask himself, is it worth it for me to throw my life away for Donald Trump? That's the big question. Is he going to talk? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think, it's possible. It seems like they're building a case against Cohen, but there's a lot of speculation about what he's going to talk about. There are many different real estate deals in Donald Trump's past. There are things that don't have to do with Russia that possibly are raising eyebrows other places. But this part of this investigation was passed on. It was referred from the Mueller probe, which deals with Russia and the allegation of collusion, to the Southern District of New York, which suggests that Mueller saw something potentially illegal that may not be related to Russia. So what he's talking about, if he talks, I think that's the thing that's not being asked.
Stormy Daniels, she's coming to town. Boy, she's making the tours, isn't she? She's coming to town in June here in Chicago.
What is the name of the tour again?
I don't honestly.
Yes,
I,
you do. I know it.
Honestly, I don't know. I really
yes,
don't.
You do.
I know
it's called "Make America Horny Again."
Oh.
Is what the name of the tour is.
That's good for her, man.
I mean, she is definitely cashing in on the and she admits it. She admits it.
Right. She'll be at the Admiral Theater sometime in June. I think she's doing a few shows, and the first two are sold out. But anyway, you've told me countless times, you wake up on Saturday morning, you're thinking, I'm one tweet away from going into the office. When you woke up,
yeah.
When you woke up this Saturday, immediately yeah. You check President Trump's tweets, and you see Mr. Peepers and Mr. Magoo on there. What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
come on.
It's going to be a really busy news day. But, this was the same day as Barbara Bush's funeral. So we were preparing for funeral coverage out of Houston. And it's a little surreal that, all of this was going down. I think the president defends his Twitter use, and his supporters say, they love it. But I tell you, there's a lot of his supporters up on Capitol Hill who say just a little less would probably fit us just fine in the Republican Party. I think, he defends himself on Twitter all the time, but when he goes to great lengths, it was a Twitter storm Saturday morning. When I refer to Jeff Sessions as Mr. Magoo and Rosenstein as Mr. Peepers,
yeah.
That's according to people whom the president has spoken. There's no such people. Don't know these characters. He's trying to defend himself from what he thinks is a really aggressive anti-Trump media. And he has a point in some cases, but sometimes news is news.
Well, I know some people love it. They're like, this guy is different from any other president we've had. But I don't want to see the president tweeting Mr. Magoo and Mr. Peepers and calling James Comey a slimeball. I just don't. There's a certain type of behavior when you're the president of the United States, in my opinion.
Right. And a lot of people share your opinion, clearly. But this president was elected doing exactly what he's doing right now. And if people thought that this was not going to continue and suddenly he was going to get in the Oval Office and poof, he was going to be George H.W. Bush, I think that there's a wake-up call here. This is how he has always communicated. It's how he operates. Whether you like it or not, it is, I think there are people who look at him and say, if you put the tweets and the comments aside and you look at the principle of what's getting done, there are supporters of his who say, it's all about what's getting done.
Right. We're talking to Brett Baer from Fox News. James Comey, of course, released his book last week. He's on the book tour right now. Seems very credible to me, but he lost me when he talked about the president being too tan, had too long of a tie, the white under his eyes from the tanning goggles. Sounded to me that he was bitter, that he put that in the book. Now, you have him on Thursday on your show,
Thursday,
right?
Live on the show, 6 o'clock Eastern time.
What are you going to ask him that hasn't been asked already?
Yeah, well, by the time we get to Thursday, I'll see what's left on the table. he's obviously, I've never seen a book tour like this, being on late night on The View on all different cable outlets. We're happy that he's coming on Special Report. There are some substantive questions about the actual investigation and his decisions some of the decisions he made after he was fired that I think are haven't been answered yet. We'll see what happens before Thursday. I agree with you. I think he got a little over his skis on trying to paint the picture.
Yeah.
The book is an interesting read. I've read it. I don't know that it advances the ball you know, beyond where you were, as far as if you liked Comey and you don't like the president, you're in the same space. If you don't like Comey and you like the president, you're probably in the same space. So we're going to try to get some substance out of the interview.
Did Comey leak classified information when he gave the memos to his friend?
So the IG is investigating that, and the question is, what were in the memos that he gave out? I think he gave them out to beyond just the one person, and that's another question. But the IG, the Inspector General for the Department of Justice, is looking into that. There were four memos that had classified material on them, in them, and I think you're going to see a lot of questions about that.
North Korea, what are your thoughts there? Our president meeting with Kim Jong-un.
Well, I think it's going to happen. I mean, everything I'm hearing inside the administration is that they're lining up that this is actually going to come to pass. The meeting with the CIA director, Secretary of State nominee Mike Pompeo in Pyongyang was kind of setting the table for this. And, you know, the question is trust but verify. You know, if they come to the table with something, how are we going to be able to verify that they're going to deliver on whatever they promise?
Right.
This is a country that has always had touted its nuclear weapons as a great sword. So it's going to be tough to imagine how they give it all up.
Wow, man, it's just one big mess, this whole thing. 3 days in Moscow. You got a brand new book out. You're coming to town on June 5th. This is about Reagan's trip to Moscow?
Yeah, it's his the final summit in Moscow with Gorbachev. It's the 30th anniversary of that summit, 1988. This is the time the book's coming out. And we, much like I did with the Eisenhower book, we look at 3 days and kind of focus in on that, tell the story. We have some great interviewed a bunch of people, people tied to the administration at the time, George Shultz, who has a memory that you couldn't believe. It's like the meeting was yesterday.
He remembers it.
And a whole bunch of people. And they gave us firsthand knowledge of that time. And then we use what was an overlooked speech, which was to Moscow State University students that Reagan delivers in Moscow, to bounce back and show how he gets to that point, much like we bounced back from the farewell address for Eisenhower and how he got to that point. So
right.
I think it's relevant now with all the Russia stuff.
Sure.
And looking forward to coming to Chicago.
How long are you here? Are you going to have time to have dinner?
I think I have a day and a half in Chicago, so I got to do my show out there, but definitely drinks.
And
I'll do that.
And you have your in-laws here, so I don't want them taking any of my time up.
I'll pencil you in. How about that?
All right, Brett Baer. We'll watch you tonight at 5 o'clock on Fox News. Thank you, buddy.
See you, Pete.
All right, Brett Baer. Good stuff, man. Check him out tonight at 5. Pete McMurray in for John Williams. Elif just handed me a report, multiple pedestrians hit by a van in Toronto. We'll keep you updated on this story. Steve, of course, will do it at the top of the hour. Wow, it's just one thing after another. Thanks again to Brett. He'll be in town on June 5th. You want to talk about a normal guy. I met him years and years ago in Rockford, and now he is on Fox News. Pretty interesting. We'll talk to the mayor after the top of the hour. You know, we're all under a lot of stress in our daily lives. How does everyone deal with stress? Elif, how do you deal with stress? What do you do?
I go to the gym.
You go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
You work out.
After work, yes.
Violetta, how do you deal with stress?
Not well, but I have a Calm app. It helps me breathe sometimes.
You know, I downloaded that app. I used it once and I forgot all about it.
Yeah, but go actually follow them on Instagram and then you get daily inspirational quotes, which are nice.
In a Zen picture, is that what it is? The Calm app is all about meditation.
Yes. I don't do the meditation sections. I just look at the pictures.
Well, you guys have seen me. Can I sit still and meditate for 5 minutes, 10 minutes? I need to work on that. Just kind of be Zen. I need to do that. Steve, how do you deal with stress?
I punch the radio.
Okay. It's nice. Most people deal with stress. How do you think? They curse. They swear.
That's nice, too. When I'm not on the call map, that's what I do.
Swearing is the number one way people deal with stress. The average time a person utters their first curse word during the day, what time do you think it is?
8 a.m.
8 a.m.?
I'm going to go 10:32.
10:32. Elif?
8:30 because that's when you're trying to leave for work and something happens.
10:54 a.m. is the first time people swear.
Because they're hungry. It's almost lunchtime.
Biggest causes of stress, financial worries, of course, not getting enough sleep, your health, and work. Those are your top stresses.
Now that's disheartening because that list of stuff is you can't control a lot. Like it feels like you can't control that.
Well, you can
like
control
your
sleep.
It's easier to be like your boyfriend's annoying you, your mom's annoying you.
Well, you can control your sleep. And if someone's annoying you, you just
I think Violetta was letting us in on her life there.
Here's a question for you. Most people deal with stress by swearing. Who do you think around here does that?
Like around where?
Here at the radio station.
Everyone.
Does a Steve Cochran swear early in the morning?
Not on the radio station, but I don't know him well enough to say.
I've talked to Cochran on the phone. I've seen him behind the scenes. I don't think he swears that much.
I don't think he does either.
I don't think so. How about Darlis? Andrea Darlis?
Yeah.
She's swearing?
She seems like she has a potty mouth. I don't know. I haven't experienced it.
I've worked with Darlis many occasions. No, she's not swearing. Dave Ennett?
No, there's no way.
He's an altar boy. Forget about that. Sandberg?
Yes.
Yes, all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, she cusses like a sailor. Yeah. How about Wendy? Wendy Snyder?
Maybe to be funny.
I've heard her swear before.
Wendy is swearing. Bill is not swearing. Not happening.
I'd like to see Bill's reaction to Wendy swearing, because you know he'd have something funny to say.
Of course.
Yeah.
John Williams? John doesn't swear, does he?
No.
Never.
Does John swear?
If he did, it would sound weird coming out.
It would sound strange.
He doesn't swear, no.
I don't think John swears. And if he does, it slips. It happens. How about Ro?
Most likely.
Ro is cussing like a sailor.
Yeah. He does it in that Chicago accent way.
Anna? Anna's cussing.
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, she's not.
Oh, sure she is. She's throwing down the F-bomb.
I don't think so.
Yes.
I've never heard her say a swear word before.
For real?
For real.
After a few beers? Nothing?
Violetta?
Oh, yes. I don't know. By that point, we're all a little three sheets in.
So if you're under a lot of stress and you throw down a curse word, it's okay. Because most everybody is doing that. It's all right.
And I was just kidding. John does swear every once in a while.
I don't think I've ever heard John swear. He's very, when I'm around John, he's always very zen. He seems like that guy.
Yeah. Okay. Till he's not.
All right. Till he's not. You're right.
I don't like it. I feel like people make fun of me. They're like, oh, that was cute. I'm like, I'm not trying to be cute. I'm mad.
Yeah, it's like, you know? I'm a girl, so I'm cute because I'm swearing.
I don't think that's why. I think it's just.
I do.
No one ever says I'm cute. Listen up for that grill sound effect. Do we have everybody ready to go? Okay. It's 720 WGN. Pete McMurray in for John Williams. John is on vacation all week. He was kind enough to have me fill in, which is nice. Elif, how are we doing so far? You okay?
A plus.
Nice. Giving away a Weber grill tomorrow. Remember, listen up for the grill sound effect. Also giving away steaks from International Meat Company, USDA Prime. That's the Cadillac of meat right there. Friday night, I saw the highlights from the Sox pitcher when they carried him out of the dugout. It just didn't look good. Kevin, do we have an update on him? Hold on. Let me turn you on. Wait a second. There you are. There you go, buddy.
He's still hospitalized at Rush University Medical Center. There were reports this weekend that he did undergo a procedure. That was confirmed by Sox VP Ken Williams. So critical but stable is the way they're describing it right now. But
wow.
It was a scary scene. I was there Friday night. We saw all this activity in the Sox dugout and people kind of scrambling, and you couldn't really make out exactly what was going on. And then we get word that he fainted, and then we get the official word of what happened, brain hemorrhage. So very scary stuff. And Danny Farquhar, by the way, just a down-to-earth, really nice guy. I've talked to him in the past. Three kids. His mom happened to be in the stands that day.
Oh, no.
And, you know, keep in mind, he just pitched. He pitched the top of the sixth inning.
Right.
Walking off the field and gets in the Sox dugout and he goes down. And then he's hurried over to the hospital. So scary stuff.
But can he talk? Is he conscious?
Critical but stable. That's all we're getting right now. I don't believe he is conscious, though. They said he was conscious when he was leaving the ballpark on Friday, but then some players were saying he was unconscious. So
right.
But he's hospitalized still at Rush and hoping for the best for him. But scary stuff there. Yeah, and Danny Forquer, just a really good guy. Three kids. So, yeah, you know, we'll see. We'll keep you posted if there's any updates. But as of now, he was placed on the 60-day DL. Sox had to make some roster moves. But he remains hospitalized.
Three things that stick out. Danny Farquhar, number one. Number two, Verlander Saturday night when he came out of the dugout with the two signs. Was that Saturday? That was Saturday, that right? Was,
yeah, I saw that. A fan kept heckling him and saying, "You suck." And then he came onto the top step at the out of the Astros dugout and the sign said, "No, you suck." So,
one piece of paper said you and the other one said suck. He had two pieces of paper that he was holding up.
Yes.
And Chris Bryant yesterday getting beaned in the melon.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was like right underneath the bill of the helmet, and there was a little bit of a laceration because the ball hit his sunglasses. But he passed all concussion stuff. Cubs say he's okay for now. But, yeah, that could have been really awful. I mean, we've seen players that get hit in the head before, and it can alter their career in many ways. So
I love how Madden and him were hugging. He's like, "You okay? You okay? Come here.
Well, he was kind of holding him up because if you get hit in the head, sometimes you're kind of in a daze and you don't know if he's having if he has a concussion.
Right.
So
well, he initially, right when it happened, he just you know, he was walking fine, and then the trainers went out there, and then he looked really wobbly and not great. But they say he's
right.
They say he's okay so far.
Has anyone ever been hit by a fastball?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Paul Konerko got hit in the face.
No, I mean, personally.
Oh, yes. Like if we've been hit with a fastball in the head? Or
not in the head, just on your body.
I played baseball my whole life. Yeah.
I mean, it hurts.
I got hit in the back of the neck once.
What?
That was really weird. You know, it's like those moments where like you're a kid and something hurts and you just kind of like laugh for no reason because you like can't really
it's nervous energy
can't comprehend what you're feeling. That's how that was. That was really weird. I don't know. I was like trying to duck the ball and it hit me in the back of the neck.
I don't understand how these major league players do it because I've been hit by a fastball in my side. Okay, and let's say it was maybe 50 or 60 miles an hour, and I had a huge bruise.
Yeah,
I can't imagine being hit by a 90-mile-an-hour fastball.
I can't imagine even standing there to try to hit that ball.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah.
How do you not flinch as you're walking to first base? Yeah, like, Rizzo gets beamed all the time.
Yeah.
And he'll just, you know, trot to first,
right,
shake it off.
Right, because it's like, you know, it's like a macho thing.
Right, it's a thing.
You can't show any sort of pain or weakness.
I mean, I'd be doubled.
It didn't hurt. Totally fine. But deep down, you're like, oh, my God.
I'd be doubled over in the fetal position. Oh, my God, this hurts so bad. We had a fundraiser at Wrigley Field, the wiffle ball tournament.
Yeah.
For Kerry Wood.
Mm-hmm.
Kerry was pitching to me, and he hit me with a wiffle ball on the arm, and it stung.
Stings.
For 10 minutes.
I was doing a little wiffle ball Saturday. Took a couple shots from the wiffle ball.
Really?
Is that the ball with the holes in it?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, it hurts.
God. You guys.
It does.
A little bit.
I bet the mayor is enjoying this. Let's bring up the mayor of our great city. It's Mayor Rahm Emanuel. How are you, sir?
Hey, Pete.
You're at a ribbon cutting right now. Is that what's going on?
I just left it. Yeah, we did. It's an SRO, which is single resident occupancy. Yes. And cut the ribbon there, and had a press conference this morning with David Schwimmer for awareness on sexual harassment in the workplace.
We just reported that in the news. You've had a busy day today. This is one of the things that I love about Chicago people. David Schwimmer has he lives in L.A., but he comes back to Chicago. He works with the theater groups here, and he gives back to the city.
Exactly. Well, you know, if you ask people that perform here or move on, They'll always say, "I'm from Chicago." There's a pride, and that takes you even when you leave. This is still your home, and
right.
That's a great thing for the city to call on in that effort. I agree with you 100%.
And we've seen Chance the Rapper the last 2 years just giving money back to the city and to schools and programs.
Yeah, I mean, Common is doing a school, and that's, you know, that's in the wired into the DNA of the city, which is if you're fortunate enough, your responsibility is to give back culturally, educationally, economically to keep the city vibrant.
Right.
Exactly.
I wanted to congratulate you on the federal ruling last week. We're a sanctuary city, and now we're still going to receive federal funds.
Well, we can. I mean, yes, we want a landmark, not just for the city of Chicago, but for the country, that the Trump administration cannot withhold funds the burn grants that help us on community policing and public safety and force us to change and retreat from our values as a welcoming city. And we've gone farther than any other, Los Angeles, Philadelphia, or San Francisco, who've also won. We've cleared the appellate court, so we're probably the case that will be taken to the Supreme Court. And I think we're going to, you know, those who believe in welcoming city are five. The Trump and Sessions Justice Department are zero on
right.
every case.
Right.
And we have to fight for that and believe, you know, and both on community policing and being a welcoming city.
Well, I thought of you last week because my son, my 12-year-old son, Charlie, was doing a project, a three-week-long project on immigration, how his great-great-grandfather came over from Lebanon. You are friends with my cousin, Ray LaHood, whose parents came over. You and I have talked about it. Your grandfather came over, and now you're the mayor of this great city. One of the things that stuck out, and I'm so glad that we had you on today, my son, my 12-year-old son, said this to me. He said, "Dad, if they close the borders, people like Mike Corey, who it was my great-grandfather that came over, won't be able to come to the United States." And I love the fact that these 12-year-olds are having this conversation.
Well, this is, you know, look, I mean, first of all, I'm glad that your son is being raised in a family that takes pride of where they're from and knows his own story and then therefore knows it's not just his story, but it's our story. Because your story is from one part of the world. My story is from Moldova, where Romanian border with Russia. My grandfather on my mother's side. My dad came from Israel. And I'm both the son and the grandson of immigrants. And people will journey over the Rio. People will journey across the Pacific or the Atlantic. But we are all part of one story. And if we change that, we're changing the character of who we are as a city of immigrants. We're also changing the character. We want your son. We want the families in Pilsen and Little Village to work with the police department. And if you change that and think of the police as an adjunct of the immigration office, they're not going to have the trust. And, you know, this is part also, you know, let me take the integration to something next. You know, almost half the new businesses started in the city are started by immigrants. They keep a vibrancy to a city. On Friday, I'll be outlining a vision for small businesses, very specific, that builds off of what we've done on micro lending, the 10,000 small businesses through our community colleges and training, the paperless operation of the Small Business Center, but how to keep the small businesses and the city of Chicago partners in their growth, job creation, and taking their dreams out of their apartment into a storefront. Following that, which is relevant to the ribbon cutting I just did, a couple weeks next, I'll be laying out a vision for affordable housing and taking on the both affordable housing, home ownership, and gentrification. And then probably end of May, maybe mid, I'll lay out, now that we have full-day kindergarten for every child, how to get ourselves a four-year plan for full-day pre-K for every four-year-old in the city of Chicago. And then something on public safety, because all of this is of a piece and fits together. Immigrants are related to public safety. They're related to small businesses. They're related to keeping our neighborhoods vibrant, both on housing and affordability, and making sure, which is true for you, your son, it's true for my children.
Right.
Their early years were foundational years, and we have to invest as a city in those years. And so these are going to be very specific things, like I did last week on the river, and declaring it a park for the city, how we're going to invest in the city from housing to early childhood education for every child, regardless of their zip code or their background.
I know you're pressed for time, but I'm just trying to process all of this. Affordable housing, but you said full days for pre-K. That's what you're going to be working on?
Well, we're already, so let's just take the latter. When I became mayor, half the city did not have full-day kindergarten.
Right.
I created full-day kindergarten for every child, regardless of what school they went to or where they lived. Then we started investing in full-day pre-K for every four-year-old. We got almost half the a little more than half the students in the city at 4 years old have full-day pre-K, but half have either nothing or a half-day. And I'll lay out a very specific four-year plan of universal full-day for every four-year-old. And then I'm going to talk about, very specifically, affordable housing, home ownership, and what I call neighborhood integrity, but how to deal as best we can with gentrification. And then something very specific on public safety and police accountability. And this Friday, I'll be laying out a vision and a very specific plan on our small business economy and our neighborhood economy.
Wow. I mean, I have to hand it to you. I remember when you were first running for mayor, I think I was doing mornings over at The Loop, and I called up Ray and I said, hey, Mayor or Rahm Emanuel is running for mayor. Can you get him on the show? And the first thing you talked about, and to this day, you're still stuck to it, you're going to change education in this city for the better. And that's what you've been talking about since you first ran.
Well, two things I would tell you is one is that Chicago, when I became mayor, had the shortest school day, the shortest school year in the United States. We also had half our kids on a full day of kindergarten. We now have one of the most competitive academic years where our kids get 2.5 more years of education than they did prior to that change. We have every full day kindergarten for every child. And our graduation rate is growing 3 times the rate of the United States every year for the last 5 years. And our kids are going to college at a higher rate, winning more scholarships than ever before. And now we're going to make sure you start earlier in life, because I really believe this. I see it in my 3 kids now, that 2 are in college and 1 is about to go next year. Kids start dropping out of college in 3rd grade.
Yeah, you're right.
That means we have to invest in their education when they're 3-4 years old.
Yep.
So they're ready in 3rd grade.
God, I believe that.
We're going to go from kindergarten to pre-K, and we're going to go from high school to college. And that's the new model, not K-12, but pre-K to college for every child. And that's how you build one city with one future.
Mayor, you're the best. Thanks for taking time today. I'll talk to you soon.
Can I say one thing?
Yes.
Can I say one other thing?
Yeah.
Your uncle, Ray LaHood, helped me build that Riverwalk, which has been transformative. And he did a great job in being a partner, and it's one of the most award-winning parks in the United States is that Riverwalk.
Well, I can't wait for you to... You talked about that last week, about cleaning up the Chicago River. I live on the Chicago River, and I can't wait for it. I walk on the river probably every single day with my dog, but I've been trying to get Ray to come to town so we can go out for drinks, but he's busy in Washington right now.
Yeah, well, he's a great guy, and he was a partner. And the Riverwalk has not only won acclaim for the city, but helped create about $5 to $6 billion of new investment.
Yep.
And we put zero money into it. I love those type of returns.
It's the best. Thank you, Mayor.
All right, man.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
How about now? You just show up in my chambers for the laughs?
No.
I am here in your chambers to put myself in your debt. In my debt.
That's right.
I am here to ask of you a favor.
Oh, this must be big.
720 WGN, one of my favorite TV shows, is about a billionaire named Bobby Axelrod in Showtime's Billions. Our next guest, he stars as Adam in Billions. You loved him in Northern Exposure. We'd like to welcome back. It's Rob Morrow. Are you at Coachella right now? Did I get that right?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm hungover and recovering and trying to get the black dust out of my nostrils.
Who did you see? Who was there over the weekend? Eminem? David Byrne?
Eminem from Chicago was crazy great. He had Dr. Dre and 50 Cent come out. We saw Miguel. We saw Cardi B. We saw...
Beyonce?
We saw Portugal. We didn't see Beyonce. She was the night before. We just came Sunday. Portugal the Man and Princess Nokia.
Now, if people don't know, you have a band. Did you play this weekend, or were you there just for fun?
We were there just for fun. I brought my daughter, who's wanted to come, and so we came and ran around and had a good time. It was really fun.
Isn't that funny how times change now? You're bringing your kids. My son wants to go, who's 12. He wants to see Bruno Mars at Lala. I'm like, wait a second.
Bruno Mars is great. Oh my God, he's a great performer.
I know, but that means I have to watch my P's and Q's and, you know, be adult like at Lollapalooza.
It definitely changes your focus.
Well, I don't see Rob Morrow not having VIP access. Did you get VIP to Coachella?
We got pretty hooked up. Yeah, we were taken care of.
if you're a TV star,
the only way.
Right? Of course, you don't want to share bathrooms. That's the key. If you're at one of these festivals,
I share bathrooms with everyone. It's just that after years of being spoiled, it's hard to go back in terms of, you know, we were able to get it. The biggest thing is you get in and out quick. And there's a place to go to where there's some room to breathe.
Right. Of course. I mean, that is the key if you have ever gone to these festivals. For some people, it's just so overwhelming just to go down. In Chicago, it's at Grant Park. But if you know how to get there, public transportation, or you're taking an Uber and you know where to walk and you have your bathrooms picked out after, like me, if I start drinking beer, it's every 30 minutes. You run to the bathroom, you run back. But once you get that laid out, they're fine. It's like any other concert.
There you go.
Yeah. So, Billions, I thought you were going to be on last night's episode. You were on 2 weeks ago. Are you going to be trying Bobby Axelrod? Is that going to be the storyline?
I cannot tell you what's going to happen, but I believe that I start appearing again next week, and then I'm on for probably five shows maybe or something like that. But I can't tell you what's going to happen. But there's a lot of fun stuff coming for sure.
Well, you told us in the past that it's weird because you only do scenes with Paul Giamatti, who plays Chuck on the show. Are you going to be able to see the rest of the cast?
It's possible.
Violetta,
you guys are, you know, in this day and age, you can't, you know, they'll send me like, so
I know I'm with you, man,
a letter saying that I'm responsible for the season's costs because I broached what's going to happen. So
I'd love to
keep my mouth shut, but I can tell you this, it was really fun to read and they were great fun to shoot.
Okay.
Sure.
Got it. I love the show. Violetta, I know you're a fan.
I'm a fan.
Of Billions.
Such a good show.
Have you noticed, when you see Rob in a scene, he's either eating or drinking scotch. Like that scene we just played 2 weeks ago, Chuck went over, who plays one of the prosecutors. He goes over to your office. You're a federal judge, right? Or some type of judge. Right. It's hard to follow. But it's the middle of the day, like 2 o'clock, and of course you're pouring two glasses of scotch.
Right.
It's because he's always too busy for Chuck. You know, he's like always doing something. He's like, hey, listen, I got my thing going on here. You're in, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
I like it.
But the coolest thing is they like to write restaurant scenes. And I had one last season in an institution in New York called the Peking Duck House, which is in Chinatown. We shot it there. And I've been going there my whole life. But this time what was great was when my character had to eat. A lot of times when actors eat in scenes, they don't want to eat because they're going to gain weight or whatever. But I feel like if this is a character who eats, you got to go for it. So I ate probably five full Peking ducks in the course of that 5 hour shooting.
I remember that scene. I love it. I love the show. And are you coming to town? You were here last summer. Are you coming to town this summer with your band?
We're not at this point. We've got some gigs coming up in LA and that's it. We've been in the studio recording. Which has been really fun, and I'm really excited about the music we're making.
If you need me to book any gigs, just let me know. You have my number.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Rob Morrow. You can see him on Billions. He'll be on this Sunday night on Showtime. It's on 9 o'clock our time. Rob, great to talk to you, man. Continued success.
You guys are great. So enjoy the... Hopefully it's nice and spring-like there in Chicago, which I know is beautiful, and... I'll get there eventually again, so I'll see you then.
And by the way, what's the website people can check out your music?
You can go to, on Facebook, there's a page, the Rob Morrow Band, and that's the best place to see what we're up to.
That's right there. Thank you, Rob. Talk soon.
Good morning. New cases just this week of stores held up with customers inside. And we've all seen those videos, right? Some suspect walking into a convenience store, a coffee shop, a gas station, robbing the clerk at gunpoint. Then some customer comes from behind and attacks the suspect. It looks brave. We've reported on it right here. And it is. But is it really what you're supposed to do?
Our next guest, you can see him on the Today Show with his Rawson Reports. Go to today.com to see all his reports. On the phone with us is Jeff Rawson. Good to talk to you again, man. How are you?
Good to talk to you. How you been?
You know, I sent you an email last week because I was on the treadmill and I immediately thought of my wife, who takes Uber everywhere, and you did a story on Uber. And before you talk about it, let me ask Violetta, who's on the show. Violetta.
Yes.
You take Uber.
Yes.
Now, when the Uber driver shows up, do you open the door and ask his name?
I don't ask his name, no. I ask if he knows my name, and then, you know, I make some chit-chat, but not really his name.
Okay, but you ask if he knows your name, yeah. Or do you say your name to him?
Sometimes, but my name's kind of complicated, so I'm just like, just get me where I'm going.
Jeff, I don't think a lot of people do this. You want to explain what the report was about?
We did a story about fake Uber drivers, about how these guys across the country, and police are putting out all these new alerts about these guys who are showing up outside of bars and restaurants. They just park outside, and they especially, you know, they prey on women, especially for sexual assault purposes. They wait until they've been drinking, in many cases, late into the night, and they just park outside of, you know, bars and restaurants. And people just come out and get into their cars, thinking it's an Uber, and then they drive off and assault these people, these unsuspecting passengers. And what you're referring to about asking to see if it's a real Uber is a lot of people walk up to a car, right, and they go, hey, you're here for Jeff, right? And they're like, yeah, and you get in. And if it's a fake driver, you're going to walk up and say that, and you're giving them the answer.
Right.
You're saying, here's my name, and they're just saying, yeah. Instead, you should walk up and say, hey, who are you here for? Make them say your name. If they don't, it's a fake driver.
Well, you posed as an Uber driver, and I want to say 9 out of 10 people opened the door and they said their name. Or yeah, just so, got in the car.
In true Ross and Report style, we go over the line. And I literally rented a Toyota Camry, which is like a pretty traditional Uber X, right?
Sure.
And what these fake Uber drivers do is, on their home printers, they print out an Uber logo,
right,
or something that looks like an Uber logo, and they tape it to the windshield. We did the same thing. We printed out what looked to be like a regular Uber logo, put it on the windshield, and just parked outside in Los Angeles in front of bars and restaurants. All of these people, like you said, probably 9 out of 10, just got into our car, no questions asked, closed the door, and just barked out where they're going. Hey, how are you? We're going here. So we're talking about women, we're talking about men, yep, alone, in groups, all of it. And when I told them who I was, I mean, after the awkward laugh stopped, the sobering reality set in where, you know, this woman was like, you could rape me. Another woman said, you know, I said if I had a gun and I locked the door, she said I'd be done.
Right.
So it's really an important story that impacts all of us. And there are very, very simple tips if you'd like me to read them through.
I was just going to say, yes,
please. I obviously need them. I've been doing this all wrong.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been doing it all wrong. No blame here. I've been doing it wrong, too, until this. So what you want to do is, first of all, on the Uber app, right, always match up the license plate to the license plate on the car. So before I ever get into any Uber and the car is pulling up, I have my app out, you know, because you're looking at where they are anyway on the little map.
Yeah.
And when they're going to pull up, look at the license plate on the, I think it's the bottom right or the bottom left of your app, depending on the update you have. And it's going to give you the license plate number. Read the license plate off the car to make sure it's the same thing. Make sure it's the right make and model. They give you a picture of the Uber driver. There's a picture of every single driver. Is the guy behind the wheel, does it look the same as the guy who's actually in the app? Then when you open the door to the back seat, don't get in, lean in and say, hey, who are you here for? Make them say your name.
Right.
Never give anything away. Only then do you get in.
I never look at the license plate number, but I do look at the make and model of the car. Because if you're leaving a sporting event,
here's the thing. Look what I did. I got a Toyota Camry.
You did, which is very, very common.
I could have taken you, Pete.
Kidnapped me. I don't know if you want that. We're talking to Jeff Ross.
And your wife's like, take him. It's fine.
Well, I immediately sent the video because it's on today.com. I sent it to my wife. And I said, Sarah, you need to look at this because you take Ubers everywhere. You need to ask. You open the door and have the driver say your name. She's like, I never do that. I go, you need to. Everybody needs to. You need to pay attention to things like that. Now,
it's so important. And this is not just us making it up. I'm telling you, there are cases across the country of people really getting hurt.
Sure.
I have a quick question.
Go ahead, Olive.
Do you not think that it's sufficient to make sure that the license plates match up?
Well, here's the thing. Why not use every piece of information you have? Yeah, the license plates Very, very good. That's probably the top thing to do. So, yes, I'd say you're pretty safe if the license plates match up. That would be a pretty crazy coincidence. But why not also just look at the guy's name and just ask who he's here for? Why not?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Use all the information. Out of all the stories that you've done, the Rawson reports, what do you get the most feedback on?
It's stories like this where we take an issue that would probably be a little dry, right? Like me, like picture me wagging my finger at you saying, you need to ask for the name,
mm-hmm.
you know, and we turn it into something visual to say, oh yeah, I guess I would do that. Where we can demonstrate something happening in the real world that we're sitting and telling you about. My philosophy has always been, and if you watch the show, you know, don't tell me things, show me things. That's how I was as a kid, and that's how I am as an adult. And it's what I react to. So I like to show things.
Well, you did a story. I bring this up because I talk to my wife about this all the time. Again, my wife never listens to me or pays attention to me, like most married couples. But you did a story on sunscreen. And you said that anything over 50 SPF doesn't work. It's fake. Everything under 50 will work. And my wife buys the 90 or 100. I'm like, you're just wasting your money because it's high-end stuff.
Yeah, it's not so much that it's fake. It's just it's not doing anything better for you. SPF 100, according to experts, is not doing anything more than SPF 50. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the prices, you're oftentimes paying more for the higher SPF. It's all marketing. You look, I mean, we all do basic math, right? You're thinking to yourself, if I buy SPF 100, it's probably twice as good as SPF 50. But that's not the case. I mean, it's not making any difference whatsoever. So what I say is get the SPF 50. That's giving you basically maximum protection of an SPF. Don't buy above that. It's a waste of your money.
What are you working on next? Do people give you suggestions? Because you did germs in the workplace, which I loved, because people are always worried about germs. What are you working on right now?
See, if I tell you what I'm working on, all my competitors who listen to you, because yes. Everyone listens to you,
right?
I'm gonna watch this on like you know CBS tomorrow.
I mean, you've done the hacking thing. You've talked about Facebook. What was the one? Texting and walking. You should stop.
Yeah.
I mean, because people aren't paying attention, they're walking into traffic.
So we did a funny little demo, and I actually tested my parents on this, and my father, I think, failed miserably,
mm-hmm.
where we basically just told people, hey, I want you to text me something and walk from here to there. And we told them, because we didn't want them to pay extra attention to how they were walking. We wanted to make it as legit as possible. So we told them, hey, so we're actually testing how well you text, how accurate you are. While you walk. So these people are walking, and they're walking like sideways. They're not checking the roadway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one person almost walked right into the bushes, walked up a curb. So and people are hurt every single year. It was based off a new study where there are thousands of people killed every year, pedestrians. You know, a lot of it's from this expert, say. So we did that. But I will tell you right now, we have a really cool story airing on Wednesday morning on the Today Show. A new Rawson reports about the future of delivery. It's about drone delivery. You know, Amazon's trying to do it. UPS is trying to do it. Google's trying to do it. But we link up with a few engineers. And you're getting the exclusive on this because I haven't told anybody about this.
I love it.
We linked up with some engineers who built this drone that can deliver packages right to your house 100 miles away. And it's basically program it like you would a commercial airplane. It flies there to the GPS coordinates. It drops the package out of the drone with a little parachute, and it lands right on your doorstep. We tested it, and it's insane when you see it.
How does this work?
We're going to deliver packages.
Well, how does this work? Because I have a covered doorstep. So you walk up some steps, and it's covered. You got the light, and then you walk in the front door. How do they do like a zoom in and drop it?
No, you're screwed.
It's going to end up on my steps or in my front yard.
You're going to have some very happy neighbors. That's
and another thing, Jeff, how do they do this with the FAA? There's going to be thousands of drones in the air. How is this going
to
happen?
Yeah, it's a very good question. So the answer to that is that they're going to have to ultimately file flight plans just like general aviation would, and just they're going to fly it at altitudes and where they deal with the FAA in either unclassified airspace where Cessnas and small planes are flying anyway without talking to air traffic control, or they're going to file flight plans with the FAA and fly around as commercial aircraft do and don't get into any trouble. So these will be filed flight plans going from destination A to destination B and then back again.
I don't know if I want drones flying in my neighborhood and buzzing around, bugging me. I don't know if I want that.
Robots are going to run the world anyway, so we're going to have to get on board.
I mean, that's going to drive me crazy. And you mentioned that you're going to be on the Today Show Wednesday with this report. Sometimes you stick around and do Lester's show in the afternoon, the nightly news. So do you hang out at work the entire day?
Yeah, Lester and I braid each other's hair. I mean, it's crazy up here on the fourth floor.
Do you go home and come back? I'm just curious. This is how my brain works.
No, that's what everyone always asks. Here's the thing. After the Today Show, my workday actually begins because this stuff, you know, we have to look at news story ideas. I have a whole team that works with me, and we're all pitching stories all the time, looking through blogs and Twitter and figuring out what the latest crazes are, calling companies, see if they'll work with us, doing investigations into companies and busting the people that deserve to be busted. So that's when the real workday begins, where I have to fly somewhere and go shoot a story, or I'm in editing, or I'm writing. So after the show is sort of, the show is the fun, you know, the fun part for
yes.
about 5 minutes, and then you get back to the grind just like we all do. It's sort of like with your show. I'm sure there's very little prep work involved in yours.
There's absolutely none, especially today. Yes.
But in general, we all have to prep, so that's what we do after the show.
So you're hanging out the entire time, and then you just go on the set when Lester calls on you.
Yeah, when Lester screams or snaps his fingers at me, and I run, and that's how it works.
I was always curious about that, because hurricane season, Al was sticking around, and he was doing, you know, 5:45 our time, so that's a long time for him to hang out.
Can I tell you something? Al Roker is like the hardest working guy, because for a while he was also doing the Weather Channel at like 4 a.m.
Right.
So he was getting up at like 2 and like working the, like, he is the most, after all of these years, one of the hardest working people in the building. And so is Lester.
Gosh, man, that's great stuff. I'm trying to think, now that I have you on the phone, is there a story that we need to pitch, Jeff, for the Today Show, for Rossin Reports?
Hey, if you have something where I can get to Chicago, you have my email address. You tell me what it is, and I'll even come by while I'm there, while we're shooting it. But if your viewers think need to be investigated, anything that is interesting to them, any new craze, anything they think is dangerous, anything.
Elif has one.
You can actually tweet me as well, at Jeff Rossin.
Okay, Elif.
So you can do it there as well.
You have one for Jeff?
Yeah, your conversation about the drones and package deliveries inspired this idea. Well, this concern more so than an idea. And it's that packages get tampered with by thieves when they're dropped at your doorstep and left there.
I have done this story.
He's done it.
I did it.
Yep.
They're called porch pirates. We've done the story. We have all the surveillance video of people doing it. And we actually highlighted a police department. I want to say in California. I forget where that was. Yeah, I believe it was California. This police department's figured out a way where they had a big problem of porch pirates, you know, basically
right.
packages delivered during the day. They know people are out at work, so they go around and they grab the packages. Where they put dummy packages on people's doorsteps with GPS in them. So if they're stolen, they're able to go literally arrest the people, and it's been working.
Very
so
good.
It's been a really cool deterrent.
I like that. I'm trying to think of my pet peeves. People walking into the elevator before I get off, that's not really a report. I'll think of something.
My wife has one. My wife hates when people take the elevator to the second floor.
Sometimes you don't know where the stairs are.
It drives her crazy in our apartment building. She's like, what? She's like, people like get in the elevator and like we have to hold the elevator for them and they run in and then they hit 2. You're like, come on.
Yeah, that would drive me nuts too. Rossin Reports, yeah. Wednesday. He's got a brand new one. You can go to today.com. All of his reports on there. Jeff, great to talk to you, man. We'll talk soon.
Talk soon, my friend.
All right. See you, buddy. Ro was here, and you were just talking to me off the air about the Sun-Times, which is blank. What is this?
I think what they're trying to do, the front page is blank, and they're trying to indicate to us what the city would be like if they didn't have, if we didn't have, 2 newspapers. And I think what they're saying is, hey, we need subscribers. So if you don't subscribe, we're going away. Which, sad.
It's like
very
a
sad.
It's like a girl trying to get your attention.
Yes.
Hey, you got to date me or I'm just going to go away.
It is. It is. There's sort of that to it. It's got that feel. It's got a desperate feel. It makes you think, well, then why do I have to do this? Shouldn't you be just enough? I don't know. I'm
leaving, I swear.
Yeah.
I am.
Yeah.
I'm not coming back.
Okay.
I'll give you one more warning.
All right, then.
Now I'm getting ready.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, listen, and I'm a purist when it comes to this kind of thing, and I definitely do not want the Sun-Times to go away. Having said that, this is not the best way to get my attention.
No, it's not.
You know, and you just keep doing, you know, good journalism, make a difference, investigative pieces, the kinds of things that now in this era you need. And you need a voice that you can trust, that you know is actually operating under the tenets of journalism,
right?
Not just somebody's opinion.
Right.
And even almost all newspapers now, all that has its own, it's all opinion too. It's like we need like straight up journalistic enterprises in this city, because I'm telling you right now, if it were not for the Sun-Times, over the last, you know, between the Sun, the Times, Daily News, over the last century, the stealing in this town would have been insane.
Seriously. Because, you think of the investigative journalism that they've done over the
right.
years?
Right. I mean, in the Tribune, amazing. Too. But you know, but Colonel McCormick was looking the other way in a lot of things.
Yeah.
I mean, the Sun-Times, I mean, you know, Royko and all of that stuff that they did, they were always the gritty Chicago paper
watchdogs,
to go out and get that
right?
stuff.
Right? Like the true watchdogs of things going on, the bad stuff.
The blue-collar people that were watching things for
right.
you.
There was the Tribune was like, oh, we don't want to get our hands too terribly dirty at this. but then the Tribune in the last 30 years really picked up the mantle. 40 years picked up the mantle of that. But, I mean, they're great, too. I don't have to, you know, that's not really a shout.
But you're right.
But you need two newspapers.
And they don't need to do that today.
I just made my donation today, and I think others should do that as well if they are able to.
I just think it's sad that they're trying to get our attention like this.
Well, and if you logged on to any of their sites today, you know, you try to read any of their stories, you saw the appeal. This, you know, please subscribe because we're in danger of not being around anymore. And so I immediately responded to that appeal thinking we've got to keep this kind of journalism alive in our city.
I'm a subscriber. I get it every day in my door. I've already read it on my phone, but I get it every day, and I've got the hard copy of it every day.
As well.
And it gets wet, and it just sits there and like in a roll.
But you like the hard copy. I love the hard copy of the newspaper.
I don't like the hard copy.
I do.
Anymore.
I like
fingers
holding,
get dirty.
I don't like the Tribune hard copy. I'll read that online, but the Sun-Times, there's something about it.
Well, it's easier because it's easier to handle, right?
Right?
But I used to love it, but I'm now kind of over it. I like it on my phone, and I'm ready to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know? That's the way I look at it.
But they give you options. You can do both. You can do either.
I just noticed it's after 3. We don't have the buzz anymore. Where's the little beep?
Oh, right. To tell us to stop talking?
Pete will tell you about that in a few minutes.
What?
What?
Is that a teaser?
There's an actual answer to what happened to the beep for us. The audience is still hearing it. We're not hearing it.
Oh. God. Yes. Oh, okay.
Because of the move.
Yes,
they actually moved it over to the new building.
Gotcha.
They actually moved the beeper machine over to the new building.
I
because
miss it.
They need it, because it does more than just the beeping, apparently. And it's a way that they can actually transmit. I don't know.
Here, I'll do this
first. Oh, there
Does
it
that
is.
Help?
Oh, well, I have a great show.